is it wearing panties, Karen?
Well, Karen's wearing panties.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt, and I have chosen an excellent movie for us today.
Oh.
I'm a real comedian.
Oh, it just keeps going.
Hashtag dad joke.
Yeah, well, it feels appropriate for what we watched.
Doesn't it?
You found The Natural History of the Chicken.
Which is not at all about The Natural History of the Chicken.
It's not. It's a PBS documentary more about people's relationship with chickens than the actual chickens themselves, I think.
I would add that they're unusual relationships with chickens. There's a lot of odd relationships that people have with chickens.
We get one right from the get-go. The documentary is dedicated to the renowned Italian Renaissance natural historian Ulisse Aldrovandi, who perceived the chicken as part of a much larger, quote-unquote, order of things.
I'm waiting for Dan Brown to write a novel about this.
The Da Vinci Chicken?
Right.
It would work with the rest of this documentary.
We open with a lady in a red dress dramatically speaking about how wonderful chickens are.
I believe that people one day, hopefully, will understand as I do, all children and adults, how wonderful a little chicken can be. All chickens. That they're just not a little chicken in the barnyard to eat. No, they have a special personality. May you all have the same joy I have had knowing a chicken. My little soulmate.
And that is when I knew I hit the jackpot. And we're going to connect back with her later in the film, but I knew in that moment, 1 minute and 16 seconds in, that I have done it again.
You have, but they wisely hold her back, and instead we start in Harpswell, Maine, with a woman named Janet. She has 16 chickens. She says that the chickens all have different personalities. Some are quiet and submissive, some are gregarious, and want to talk and ask questions. And then we get the story of number 7.
Yes.
One afternoon, Janet let the chickens out to graze, and it started snowing. She went to call the chickens, and everybody came back but one of them, number 7.
Yes, and all of this is told in the form of a reenactment.
Yeah, that's important.
Very important.
I also thought to myself, they're your friends, but you've just numbered them?
I mean, my friends just go by numbers.
Yeah.
Are you saying that's weird?
Slightly. So her dog finds the chicken.
There she was, but the poor dear thing was lying on her back, just frozen. Like the kind that you'd find in the grocery store.
Would you find a chicken like this in the grocery store in this state?
This documentary is going to inspire me, I think, to do some social media posts because the chicken is under some steps, like leading up to a porch. And there's this shot inside under the steps, peering out where you see Janet and her dog looking in. And then in the front of the frame, slightly out of focus, is this chicken with its legs sticking straight up in the air.
This chicken was a really good actor. If you try to tell me that was a taxidermied chicken, I'm going to call you a liar, sir.
Well, I hope it was, because the next part of the reenactment is her dragging it out from under there with a rake.
Yes. With grace and elegance, as Dog Martha looks on.
Yes. Janet brings number 7 back into her house and is getting a shoebox out to bury her because she seems to have been frozen to death.
And the shoebox is insanely too small for the chicken.
Oh my gosh. It's like maybe half the size of what you would need for this chicken.
Even if the chicken's legs weren't straight up in the air, this box is too small.
Right. The chicken is supposedly dead, but she doesn't want to just cram the chicken in. So she decides, well, I'm going to just leave the chicken on the kitchen table and see if it thaws out a little bit so I can more effectively cram it into the box. So she goes and does housework and comes back an hour later.
So I took from this two things. One, you should never eat anything Martha brings to a potluck. And two, that is a really good dog. That there was a dead chicken laying on the kitchen table within reach of this dog, and it's just like, whatevs.
Yeah. So she comes back, and the legs are pretty stiff, but she discovered that the chicken had a little pulse.
My God, she's alive!
So she gets a hot water bottle and puts the chicken on that to try to warm it up. And she discovers, she clocks it, that the chicken is breathing about 4 times a minute. So this is what she says.
So I've thought, well, by golly, you'd better give her CPR.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And I pried her little beak open, and I did give her mouth to beak.
As she says this, they cut to the dog, right? Who looks at the camera as if to say, do you believe this shit?
The dog is the Jim Halpert of this documentary, and it put me of the mind of the CPR episode from The Office, where they're doing CPR on the dummy, and they're trying to do it to the stay and alive beat, and the dog is just like, I'm not down for this at all.
She says she did this a number of times.
For 3 hours! I don't think the paramedics would do CPR that long on a person.
No. And then she's back in business. So she gave number 7 a lot of hugs, and she had a baby crib that she set up in the living room, and she kept number 7 in the crib that whole week till she got her strength back. And while they were doing that, she discovered that number 7 likes watching television.
And it cuts to a hospital show where somebody's coding, and she insists that's where she learned how to do CPR on a chicken.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And that's kind of where we leave Janet for now. And next we meet Joseph Martinez. He's raising chickens. He says that,
I think the chickens here live a great life. I can tell it not only from the flavor of the meat and the quality of their eggs, but in just their sense of well-being. And these are very happy chickens.
So the better something tastes, the happier it was when it was alive?
That doesn't seem logical to me.
I'm also a little afraid of how he's maybe tested this.
Honestly, this guy I found really boring.
He's almost a little hipster with his chickens.
He was hipster before hipster.
Yes. He's the hipster.
Patient zero of hipsterness.
There we go. We spend a little time with Joel Vavra from Crete, Nebraska, who does a bunch of chicken imitations.
Very impressive rooster impressions.
So realistic, it woke up our tortoise.
Who's now very confused. First, Joel does the, like, rooster noise, which is, you know, quite accurate. And then he acts out the rooster doing the mating dance.
And then he does a dance around her by putting one wing down and one leg up, and it's...
And I find myself wondering, is Joel single?
You know, Crete, Nebraska, this might be how you catch yourself a lady friend.
He's got overalls. He's got the whole Crete, Nebraska look.
I'm guessing there's a young woman at a nearby farm who finds all of this fetching?
Maybe.
She shouldn't.
No.
But she might. We next go to Ohio, and we meet a series of people.
NIMBY people. Not in my backyard. People who hate living next to a rooster farm, and somehow thought that when they moved into the country, there wouldn't be country things happening.
They were in the country. It was peaceful and quiet. And then Bobby Wayne Webb moved in. And I like how he's got 3 names, like they're identifying a serial killer.
Exactly.
Because apparently he killed their peace and quiet. He had 100 rooster huts in his yard. And they're all very much convinced that he's raising these things for gambling and cockfighting and that sort of thing, which he denies, but I'm not sure if I believe him.
Because why would you just raise roosters?
Yeah, he says that it's like raising a kid to him.
The only time they crow is early in the morning at daybreak. That's because they're waking up. And in the evening, when they're going to sleep and I'm feeding them, they crow. That's when they mostly do all their crowing. I think it's a lovely sound myself.
We have a rooster in our neighborhood. It is not a lovely sound, and amplified by 100, that's a hard pass.
Yeah, I was very much siding with the neighbors. So we get a brief little interview with a guy named Ray Johnson, who is identified as a gamecock breeder. And he talks about how the crow of the rooster is a challenge, that the only point of a rooster is to reproduce and kill another rooster. And he says,
they just ate another rooster. That's the way they came out of the jungle in Asia. One of them's going to walk away alive, and the other one's going to walk away dead.
Well, I mean, we've already seen that chickens can come back to life. So perhaps they will walk away. No? You're not buying that?
Well, I wouldn't be if it were not for where we're ultimately going with this documentary. So there are a couple of these neighbors that are worth specifically identifying. One of them is David, and he's worth mentioning because all these neighbors are trying to figure out how they're going to combat this noise problem. And he says,
well, I'm quite a student of Eastern philosophies. And one of the books I've read was On the Art of War by Sun Tzu, a Japanese warlord. And he wrote this doctrine on how to defeat an enemy.
So we thought Bobby Wayne Webb was a serial killer, but I'm pretty sure now it's David.
He got neighbors, the local newspaper, county prosecutors all together to try to combat Bobby Wayne Webb's roosters.
They go to war on Bobby Wayne Webb.
They hire someone to count the number of crows that occur throughout the day, and that person claims that there were over 20,000 of them.
Based on the rooster we have in our neighborhood, I think that might be a little bit of an exaggerated number, but it did seem like an annoying amount of crowing.
If you've got 100 of them and they're all directly trying to challenge each other all day, maybe. Bobby Wayne says that he can't believe the number, but the judge rules that he has to get rid of all but 5 of his roosters.
And I feel sad for the 95 roosters that are surely no longer in this world.
Yeah, I did write down at this point, what does this have to do with the natural history of chickens?
Nothing. Nothing in this movie has anything to do with the natural history of chickens.
And then we meet from West Palm Beach, Florida, Karen Estrada. She introduces us to Cotton the Rooster, and this is the woman who we saw at the very beginning of the documentary. And she begins by swimming with the chicken. I watched this 2 or 3 times. Because the way that they shot this, the angle that she was at, I wasn't totally sure if she was wearing a swimsuit.
I had the same reaction. Like, is she swimming nude with a rooster?
And then she reads us a poem. The word poem should be in as many quotes as the natural history of the chicken should be.
I feel like even more.
Because this is her poem.
Each day, the beautiful white rooster called Cotton arises crowing. He has such love and happiness.
Oh, look how tiny you are.
He has such a joy exuding from his whole beautiful being. I never even knew a human that was filled with so much love and joy, so great to greet me each morning.
Yeah, that's not a poem.
It's not a poem. It's like a cry for help.
Maybe something like that. And while the poem is being read, she's bathing the chicken and like blowing him dry with a hairdryer.
Well, if you have swimmed. If you have swum. If you took your chicken in the swimming pool.
There we go.
You're going to have to rinse him off because you don't want that chlorine water just sitting on him all day.
That's true. But do roosters like swimming? Are we going to see a rooster replace the seagull in the live action Little Mermaid?
I think that's a bit too far.
A bit too far. I think it's an excellent idea.
You've already made the egg joke.
You're in a foul mood.
Oh.
I've got a million.
She takes the chicken on a car ride. And so we get this amazing shot.
Oh my God.
Of like the camera has been mounted on the hood of the car looking in. And so the chicken's riding shotgun and she's behind the wheel.
And Cotton is sitting on like a booster seat.
Sure is.
So Cotton's sitting on a booster seat and they're just driving along.
I think they maybe identify what kind of rooster he is, but he's white. And he's one of those roosters that just inherently looks grumpy when you look at him straight on.
Right. Which might be all roosters.
Yeah. There's something about like the shot of this, like the way this is filmed. She's driving like a really old boxy car. It looks like some sort of like failed TV pilot where her and this chicken are supposed to like solve crimes or something.
Like a buddy cop sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that just, that tickled me. I watched that multiple times. I'm not going to lie. I'm not ashamed.
Karen and Cotton.
Well, does she get top billing?
Cotton and Karen.
Cotton and Karen.
She says this.
He really thinks he's human. He doesn't notice the difference.
Oh, he thinks he's human. He thinks.
Right.
You know, he wants to get up on the bed and go to sleep there and wants to eat with us. In fact, he'll jump up on the table when we're eating and he eats just about everything I eat. Corn on the cob, that's his favorite. And, he loves a good McDonald's.
So another person whose potluck food we cannot eat. This is a trend in this movie. And when she talks about McDonald's, she serves him a burger.
Yep.
Is it normal for a chicken to eat a cow?
Well.
This isn't right. Chickens don't eat cows. This is very upsetting to me. And now when you're, you know, going to the grocery store and buying your free-range chicken, do you have to try to look on the label to see if it's also eating cows? And then is it now red meat? This just opens up a whole truckload of problems for me.
Is it red meat?
I mean, I'm a vegetarian, so not going to eat a chicken. But I feel like a lot of things we learned today would make me not want to eat a chicken if I weren't a vegetarian.
It's frightening. When Karen leaves the house, she always leaves the television on for Cotton, who likes classical music and Pavarotti.
I would say his facial expression seems more skeptical of Pavarotti.
Yeah, I agree. And she also puts a little panty on Cotton in case he has a little accident.
Panties. The chicken wears panties.
Mm-hmm.
Panties, Karen.
If we could just see the beauty of a chicken, a chicken's personality, that they're not just in the barnyard, they're here for a reason. It is a beautiful, beautiful gift to us on this earth.
Then why is it wearing panties, Karen?
Well, Karen's wearing panties.
Oh my God. Oh my God. My notes have panties written in all caps 4 times. I was very troubled by these panties. The panty-wearing rooster.
Oh. You weren't soothed by her explanation of how the panties work?
The panties, how do they work? I tie them here. See, it comes. Here it is. Just tied under the wing. So they're very comfortable. And they just come right through. Then I put a little diaper pad inside.
No, I wasn't soothed by that at all. I also thought her choice of the word panties for a rooster, like diapers maybe, underpants. Aren't you demasculating a rooster by putting him in quote-unquote panties? This rooster has enough problems.
Oh, I don't think this rooster has any masculinity left. You think she runs around just trying to put panties on every animal that she sees?
Maybe.
Like she's got an Etsy store for animal panties.
Oh, maybe. She also feels like one of those people that's going to buy those like super realistic baby dolls.
Yeah.
Somebody should keep Karen away from the internet.
I hope that participating in this documentary has resulted in Karen making some friends.
I hope so too. Or at least her children maybe being like, oh, okay, we need to visit mom more often.
Yeah. One of us is going to have to move back home.
They're doing like rock, paper, scissors.
Who's going to live with mom and the chicken?
Right.
Because you know that person, anytime they go anywhere, they're riding in the back.
Oh, absolutely. Why would you make Cotton sit in the back?
Yeah. Well, we go back to Janet, which kind of surprised me a little bit. Janet talks about how it was a little scary when the press got hold of her story about giving mouth-to-mouth to a chicken. She got calls from people all over the country, from DJs, from the international press.
I think there was a lot of interest at the story at this time because there were a lot of things that were going on that were not particularly pleasant in the media. The trial of O.J. Simpson was happening.
Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
And I think people were just kind of fed up and needed a story that was homey and a Cinderella story, if you will, that did work out.
The fact that she uses Cinderella is a love story.
Yes, it is.
And she spent 3 hours giving mouth to mouth to a chicken, which suddenly cast this story in a slightly different light for me.
I mean, you did have the chicken's legs sticking up, and there's feet on the end of legs, and no, I can't get there. This isn't Cinderella adjacent at all.
If the chicken had been wearing shoes, maybe.
Ooh, she should have gotten with Karen and had little shoes made for chicken number 7.
Chicken number 7 no more, because Janet says that after all of this happened, she upgraded her name. She's no longer calling her friend number 7. Now her friend is named Valerie.
Yes.
For her valor. She puts Valerie back with the other chickens.
When she went back into the coop, all those girls were astounded to see her. They all sort of crowded around, and it was like a town meeting. I mean, you know, everybody was talk, talk, talk. And where have you been for a week? Let's hear where you've been, what you've been doing. You were gone quite a while. Where were you? And tell us about it. Tell us about it. She said, well, I have had a real experience, let me tell you. And so Valerie, I guess, told them that she'd been in the house and things had been very nice and she was watching television and she had good meals and lots of love.
It was a very detailed conversation that she imagined between all the chickens.
That's what I was thinking too, but then Janet says that she knew someone who was an animal communicator.
He also looks like Tommy Lee Jones.
He totally does.
Yeah.
Which is kind of appropriate given his whole, like, search every hen house, farmhouse, outhouse.
I like it.
It made me wonder, like, how many degrees of separation are there between the average person and an animal communicator? Is it more or less than the degrees between Kevin Bacon?
Oh, it's got to be less. Because I feel like half the films we watch have some sort of animal communicator, whether it's like a dude sniffing cat fur in a boat. To this.
Yeah. She has the animal communicator ask Valerie a couple questions.
When you were frozen, had you been going down the tunnel with a light at the end? And if so, why did you come back? And so Valerie said to him, yes, indeed, I did go down the tunnel. I got pretty close to the end where the light was. And then I was told, you must go back.
The montage that plays while Valerie's describing heading back sort of has like clips of now she's a baby chicken and now she's an egg.
Yes.
So cheesy.
It kind of starts to take on like 2001.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very deep.
It's like she's a star chicken now.
Right.
Well, that kind of puts the bow on Janet's story with Valerie, but we're far from done because next we hear a man, Elwin Bud Johnston. And it's funny because most of the people in this next segment all have go-by names.
Yes.
So he says,
Mr. Olson was a real enjoyable man to talk to. I always made a special point to come by and see him because I was little. And I asked him how his chicken was, and he said, all good things got to come to an end. So I really never did know for sure what happened to the chicken. It was a strange episode. He was headless.
I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now?
I was watching this with headphones on while you were doing something else, and I think I shrieked. I think I pushed back from the table at what I was about to see.
So the bulk of this is told by Troy Waters, who says that back in the 40s, his grandparents were running a farm where they were raising fryer roosters. So they'd slaughter a few of them at a time. His grandpa would chop off the heads. He said that, like, his grandpa would say, you know, every once in a while you cut off the head and the body moves around a little bit, but they'd always go ahead and die.
As you would do when your head is cut off.
Right. Until one day, one didn't die.
Any normal man had reached down, picked him up, and cut his damned head off. Again. But not Ole.
Not Ole.
Not Ole.
He decided to make a poultrygeist.
Oh. Ah.
He picked him up, stopped him from bleeding, and that was his headless chicken. And that was Mike.
Mike.
Mike the poultrygeist.
Was Mike named Mike before he lost his head?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know.
Because even the lady who ended up giving mouth to mouth to her chicken didn't name her chickens. They were just numbered. Like, was Mike named post-decapitation?
Mm.
And if so, Mike?
See, okay, I think that he probably was not named pre, because when you're a farmer and you're constantly slaughtering animals, I don't think you name them.
No, you don't have that sort of like romance toward animals that people who keep them as pets have.
Yes. They talk about how people start hearing about this story. And they show this clip from an LA paper. Did you pause and read any of the story?
I did not.
This is my favorite paragraph. Alive without a head, the rooster had set the poultry world agog. His refusal to quit this earth has mystified experts. One look at headless Mike, his neck twisted toward a bottle in which his head is preserved, and drinking people decide to reform.
But then we find out that the pay that you gave to this couple to look at their chicken was a six-pack of beer.
Yeah. They get a promoter. A promoter maybe approaches them and convinces them that putting the chicken in sideshows would bring in some money. And so they take Mike out on tour.
The 40s were a really weird time.
No television, and we're on the brink of world war.
Right.
It's the perfect time for a headless chicken to strike.
I would like to point out that they didn't chop the head off of the chicken. They cut the face off of the chicken, which is the most horrific thing ever. Like, imagine somebody just cutting your face off and then being like, oh, well, you're still going to live.
Yeah.
This is profoundly messed up.
I feel like they learned a real bad lesson. Like, do you think they started trying to botch all of the chicken decapitations because of Mike?
Yes, 100%. There's a lot on the internet about Mike the Headless Chicken. And apparently they did I guess you would call that a necropsy.
Mm-hmm.
They found that a fortunately located blood clot kept Mike from bleeding out when his face was cut off.
Oh.
And that chickens' brains are way in the back of their heads.
Okay.
And then they ask, I don't know why Mike lived. You only cut his face off. That's why he lived.
Our last person who has questionable attitude towards chickens is Pastor Joseph Tower. Pastor Joe is reading for us an article which he appears to have written about how he learned a valuable lesson about calling people chicken.
Yes. And he's reading from this article, which looks like it's maybe in something like the Reader's Digest.
Yes.
And he's one of those writers that says everything twice.
A chicken was a coward or lacking in courage.
That's the exact same thing.
Many people have never really known a chicken. I mean, the feathered bird commonly found on farms.
Dude, that's the same thing.
He's defining everything to get his word count.
Right. You know, he's probably being paid by the word or something. So he just, everything is like, he says it twice.
He says that,
I've been fortunate to be around chickens much of my life, and have formed a close bond with several. One of the more memorable was Liza,
who had a great depth of chicken wisdom.
Yes.
Her dark eyes sparkled with life, and as I later realized, a great depth of chicken wisdom.
according to Pastor Joe, Joe can tell that Liza really wants to be a mother.
Right.
But she's small and the other chickens kind of uproot her from her nest, so she can't properly incubate her eggs long enough. So Pastor Joe does her a solid and gets her her own little area where she can nest, and she lays 6 eggs and they all hatch. And
never was a mother more devoted, more thrilled, or more suited to the task at hand. Liza was fairly glowing with the pride and joy of motherhood.
And as he's describing this journey, it's a reenactment, and there's chickens acting this all out. So, like, when they talk about the chickens flowing her out of her nest, a chicken gets thrown out of their nest. When they talk about, like, raccoons eating her first batch of eggs, there's a chicken watching a raccoon eat her eggs. How did they get them to do this?
I don't know. There's some talented animal acting in this documentary.
Very talented animal acting. I feel like it's worth pointing out, too, that when he did her a solid and built that little house for her, it was a house with amenities.
I constructed a miniature chicken house, complete with all the amenities, food, water, and a private nest that would be the envy of any chicken's eye.
He makes it sound like
a workout center.
Right. It's got Ethernet.
Right. Like a pool, a hot tub, business center.
A first floor master.
Right. Oh, bless.
Well, he says that
I felt quite good about the perfection of it all. The absolute order in God's universe. The demonstration of life as it should be. It was during one of these moments of reflection that I was shocked into a broader understanding of our true relationship with God's creatures.
And now shit's about to get real.
And it is very well acted on behalf of the chickens.
The chickens are great. He's annoying, but the chickens are wonderful. All the chickens scatter and dive for cover, and he says he knows that this meant that there was a hawk nearby. So he sees Liza running for her chicken house.
Panicking.
And yeah, he saw the look of panic in her eye.
Suddenly the same thought struck us both.
They're babies.
And he doesn't do anything to help the babies.
No.
He just continues to look out the window and dramatically declare, the babies.
She turns back to her 6 tiny chicks who are oblivious to what's happening and rushes to them and sits on top of them. And the hawk makes his attack run.
I've tried to interpret the expression I saw come over her. Was it resignation? Perhaps surrender? Or was it releasing and putting the outcome into the hands of a higher power?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. How is he seeing the expression on a chicken that's, like, tiny and all the way across the field?
From his house, inside.
But the filmmaker, he's not constrained by this reality. So he can zoom up on this chicken. And the look on her face does suggest these things. This chicken needs an Oscar.
They cut back and forth between a close-up on his eyes and a close-up on the chicken's eyes.
And there's some fine chicken acting there.
So the hawk dives in and attacks. And only now does Pastor Joe come out of his damn house.
Way to help out.
And he says,
I had just witnessed a chicken perform a deed that would make headlines if the same act had been performed by a human. Liza had overcome the so-called survival instinct and with precision of forethought offered her life for another. The phrase entered my mind, no greater love.
Sorry.
I feel like Pastor Joe is really reaching for the sermon this Sunday.
Oh my God, right? Oh, I can picture it. And you're waiting because it's probably like September and, you know, football season. And you just want to get out of there so you can go home and watch the game. And you're just sitting there listening to Pastor Joe tell the story about the chicken without the benefit of the fine chicken acting.
You definitely lose something without the reenactment.
The reenactment? I got goosebumps. I literally got goosebumps. Or chicken bumps?
Chicken bumps. There you go. Maybe he brings the chicken with him.
Oh. But I'm not sure if Liza and the chicken that were selected to act in this film are the same chicken.
Well, they wouldn't have to be.
No.
I wonder, because he's been in this documentary, he's written a story that was published about this. I think this is the one story where they maybe don't tell us where exactly this is located, but I'm picturing the heart of the Midwest.
Oh, absolutely. This is an Iowa story.
It might be. And Pastor Joe, there are flyers. Come Sunday night to our church and hear visiting Pastor Joe tell the story of the great love that both the chicken and Jesus have for us.
You have a revival.
It's the chicken revival. And like everybody gets a piece of fried chicken on the way out.
Oh.
Because it's like tone deaf.
Oh. Read the room.
Apparently the hawk misjudged the thickness of the coat of feathers that Liza has, because Liza survives. And she's got still got her face and everything. Like, she seems unharmed.
Nobody has to do CPR.
She's unchanged, but Joe is not.
I believe that I was set an example. And I hope to confront any situation with the grace, dignity, and confidence in God that I witnessed in Liza. I know now that I would be honored to be called Chicken.
So, this is the part where I got a little bit teary, because that actually was kind of a cool story that Liza was running for her life and then was like, oh shit, my babies.
They're babies.
And went and protected them. Like, that's actually kind of a cool story. I'm also the person that watches all of those, like, dog saves a bird from drowning in the pool. You won't believe what happens next. I was suckered in. I would probably be in the same thing as Joe, monetizing the shit out of my story of Liza the chicken.
Well, I thought Pastor Joe damn well better not be eating chicken anymore.
No kidding. No kidding.
If he's ascribing all of this to, like, self-sacrifice.
Right.
Choice.
Right.
Free will. Bravery. You better not be fucking eating the thing then.
No.
Like, maybe if it dies of natural causes.
But then, like, would you eat a person if it died of natural causes? I'm not gonna.
He's humanizing these chickens to an insane degree, so much so that he's comparing the chicken to Jesus.
He better be a vegetarian now. So I wanted to look up this Call Me Chicken story. And as I was doing so, I actually discovered that this is a really popular story. There are a ton of websites dedicated to this story. And there are even people who have made stuffed chickens that look like Liza that you can buy.
Wow.
His story touched a nerve with people.
I'm picturing, like, if I were to make some sort of art inspired by this, I would get like a photo of a beach with a single set of chicken footprints.
Oh my God. Would they run in one direction and then swivel around and come back the other way? Because otherwise I don't feel like they honor the story. Is he saying that Jesus was like, oh shit, oh, I have to go save people?
Why are there only one set of chicken prints here,
right,
Liza?
Oh, I mean, good for Pastor Joe.
Good for Pastor Joe.
I did feel like a sinking feeling in my heart when I thought the hawk got Liza. I'm the audience for Pastor Joe. Dang it.
Well, Jamie, I guess we've learned something about you. But what did you learn?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
I learned, watching the movie to the conclusion of the credits, that C-H-I-C-K-E-N is the way you spell chicken.
Yeah, there's a great song at the end.
Yes. But I also learned that the documentarian who created this, Mark Lewis, actually has this as sort of his calling card or his MO for producing documentaries. He picks an animal, like I think he's done dogs, he's done frogs. I feel like now I'm telling a Dr. Seuss story. And then finds offbeat people who will tell you their experience with these animals and creates documentaries out of them. And I think I may need to find more of his work to watch. I would say to our listeners, this was an interesting documentary and it wasn't terrible. I would give this one like a 2 out of 4 stars. Maybe a 2.5 since Liza survived. And I may be buying this Liza stuffed animal if it's still available in this Etsy shop.
I would agree with you. We watch a lot of bad stuff intentionally. I think that this is more like just, it's weird and quirky. There's a lot of entertainment actually to be had here.
I was thoroughly entertained, except for the boring random chicken facts. I was pretty entertained and I was impressed with the chicken acting in this film.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with this documentary was when it tried to be educational and lean away from the fucked up stories it was telling.
Right.
Like, what is the threshold to get your documentary on PBS?
Right.
This feels like he made the stories that he wanted to make, which were as much about quirky people as they were about chickens. And then to get it onto PBS, he had to like shoehorn in 5 minutes of random chicken facts.
He did have facts about, you know, how chickens are kept and in humane conditions and stuff like that. But it didn't feel preachy, I guess, because it was just sort of cards. It wasn't, nobody was talking during those portions. But yeah, I know that we have watched a lot of bad documentaries on Amazon because Amazon seems to have no
fucks to give.
Amazon has no, like, bar is really low.
Yeah, no standards.
If you can do anything, you can have a documentary on Amazon.
If you can figure out how to upload it.
Right. And PBS, I would think, has higher standards than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little surprised, honestly, that this did get funded by PBS because it seems like not quite to their standard, but it's not a bad little film.
I think the filmmaking is not the problem with this, really, except for maybe, I think, like, the middle part in the beginning with, like, the neighbors fighting about the noise is, like, that part could go.
Yeah, it wasn't very entertaining or interesting.
No.
But I did look at reviews for this, and there were people who were like, I watched this when it originally aired, and then for every Sunday for weeks afterwards, I kept tuning in to see if it would air again so I could tape it and send it to friends because I couldn't describe it in a way that did this movie justice. So you had, you know, people who were like, this is terrible, blah. But then you had these people who genuinely loved this movie. And I guess I fall a little bit more into that category. And I think that if you listened to this, and maybe we should have said this up front, watch the movie, then listen to this, or listen to this and then watch the movie. But it's worth watching, I feel like.
It's more worth watching than 90% of the things that we have watched for this podcast, definitely.
Yes.
I feel like the people who made this, like, what was his name?
Mark Lewis.
Mark's seen Star Wars. You know, you start with a big, big opener, a battle, explosions, an invasion, a woman giving mouth to mouth to a chicken.
Right.
And then you quiet things down with like a neighborhood squabble. And then you end with you got a 1-2 punch of a headless chicken and a Liza dying for our sins.
Right.
Guy knows how to tell a story.
It basically is Star Wars.
I don't know. Or the Bible. One of the two.
These chickens, if they did a reenactment of Star Wars, these chickens would be strong enough actors to be able to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, what did you learn?
I learned a few things. One of them was that 4 random sentences is all you need to make a poem.
Right.
Another thing that I learned, or just re-emphasized, I guess, was fuck potlucks.
Right?
Every workplace that I've been in has potlucks. And I would never directly accuse any specific coworker of anything, but you know, there's the person who's got 20 cats in her house and you don't know about it. There's the person who's got a chicken with a diaper who's like letting the chicken run around on her countertops and she's bringing in like salad for y'all, you know?
Right.
Like,
There are some really questionable hygiene choices.
Yeah. The other thing that I learned was I agree with you that on the surface, this documentary was making a case kind of against factory farms. And yet, I kind of feel like the movie unintentionally makes the case for factory farms. When it talks about how the chicken mouth to mouth was the story the nation needed to distract itself from the darkness of the O.J. Simpson trial? Because how many feel-good chicken stories would it take to distract me from the clusterfuck this country has become?
Right.
We're going to need a lot of chickens.
A fact that you may have picked up from this is that there are, like, there's something like 80 billion chickens in the world. There's like 10 chickens to every person. So if every chicken has a story, that's a lot of stories.
There's a lot of chicken stories in the city.
Right.
Oh, God. Well, we should thank Toon Dragomir, who I'm guessing has never been more proud to have his theme music associated with this podcast. It's Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. Also, a shout out to our podcast friends 6 Foot Plus and The Projection Booth. And Jamie, once again, thank you for doing another episode with me. This was quite fun.
Yeah, I'm glad that I found this film. I'm glad I only had to watch 1 minute and 26 seconds to realize that I had another gem. And I am waiting for my checks to start flowing in based on this great talent that I have.
Well, you are absolutely going to get a percentage as soon as I get any money out of this podcast.
Oh, great.
And on that note, we'll see you next time. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt.
Bye-bye.
I had more puns I forgot to work in, but that's all right.
Oh.
I wanted to do an inside yoke. I think I had one other one that I had written down.
Oh.
Poultrygeist was one of my favorites.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, this one wasn't as good. Like, I was going to say that the neighbors had a fouling out
with
Bobby Wayne Webb or whatever his name was.
Oh, that was good too.
Yeah.
Are you still recording?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can put him in at the stinger.
C-H-I-C-K-N. That's the way to spell chicken.
You should have cut his damn head off.